Hey, it's Tuesday, January 29th, 2019. This is Beginner's Puck, a podcast for hockey fans, both new and old.
Hey, Erica.
Hey, Deb.
Guess what?
What?
Hockey is back on our television. The All-Star break is over.
Our long international nightmare. Actually, it wasn't a nightmare, but it is over.
It is over. I don't know.
It was kind of a nightmare for the Pacific Division, I will say that.
Well, there is that. It's a nightmare for my fantasy hockey team, too, because all of my guys had, I don't know, bye week-itis or something, and they completely collapsed. So I went into the All-Star break like 0-9, which is not good. And then a bunch of my players are now on their bye week. So I don't know that I'm going to come back from this.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, NHL.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It means nothing. But do you know what does mean something? $25,000. So let's talk about the All-Star Skills Competition, because this has been the thing that has been burning up the airwaves and internets since it happened. And you and I watched this together, kinda.
Sort of. Yeah. I always enjoy watching hockey with you. But when we're watching a hockey game, it's kind of easy to sort of sync up with each other because there's a time clock that's running. Right. So,
and this is watching it together via Skype. So people don't think that I flew to Edmonton again.
Oh, God, no. So we're just on Skype together, you know, not even on camera or anything. We're just listening and we have our televisions on. So like I'm usually ahead because I'm watching the live broadcast. And so, you know, I can just be like, okay, I'm going to pause it when it gets to 13 minutes, 44 seconds. Tell me when you're there and I'll hit play. And then we're basically in sync. Turns out you can't do that very easily in the skills competition because you don't have a time clock the entire time. So there was an awful lot of sort of like, wait, you pause. No, you pause. But it was still fun to do that. Also, we didn't have the same feeds because the Canadian feed was very different from, it seems like, the NBC
feed. It was the superior feed, as always. Because let me tell you, we had lots and lots of Jeremy Roenick and Mike Milbury's stupid face. And we didn't have any mic'd up players. We didn't have on-the-bench interviews. I mean, we saw creepy Pierre McGuire, like, grab... I just can't even.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like that was
I did see that because somebody tweeted. No. It wasn't somebody tweeted. We had the NBC feed on our secondary television, just on mute. So right. I happened to be looking at the other TV I'm not familiar with Pierre McGuire except for his name, so I didn't know who that was. I just saw some guy with a microphone in his hand skate up and like put his microphone hand on the hip of this skater who had just been really awesome. And I was like, oh, dude, what are you doing? And then I found out it was Pierre McGuire, and I was like, oh, maybe that's why people aren't particularly fans of his.
Yeah, no, it was just kind of gross. So everybody's like, well, he was just moving her out of the way. But, like, he doesn't do that with any of the dudes. It's like, you know, that's just you're being a little too familiar. So it was Kendall Coyne was the women's national team player who was asked at the very last minute, thanks to Nate McKinnon, what a guy, love him, who basically was out of the competition the whole All-Star game weekend because of a foot injury. Or as we like to call it in Hockeylandia, lower body injury.
Lower body injury.
He hurt his foot. So he's taking a break. I mean, because honestly, if you're a team that's even in a little sniffing contention, like you don't want to break your players for something that really doesn't mean anything, like the All-Star game. So he set out and put a tweet out and said, hey, you know, I can't do the fastest skate competition. What about Kendall Coyne? Is she around? You know, here she's pretty fast too. And she happens to live in the area. So they put her in. And previously to this point, we have had women players at the All-Star game, but they demoed things. So this is the first time a woman actually competed in the competition. And she was pretty dang fast, I got to say. I'm kind of bummed that she skated first because that was contention, too.
I was mad. Yeah. I mean, you get sort of a psychological boost knowing what you have to compete against. Mm-hmm. So I always feel like, and in any kind of sport or any kind of race or anything, whoever goes first is at a bit of a psychological disadvantage. Or maybe it's the fact that the people who go later have a psychological advantage. But one way or the other, it sucks to go first. The person who's first doesn't usually win. That's just the way it is. So, I mean, I can understand the idea that, you know, you want her to be in a position where at least at some point she's leading, I guess, maybe.
I don't know.
That's pretty flimsy, though.
Pretty flimsy. But she didn't come in last. She did beat Clayton Keller. And the guys seemed to, like, really were, you know, appreciative of her compete.
Her skill.
And her skills.
Deb, do not say that word.
I'm talking like a hockey bro. Come on. I'm trying to, like, channel my inner hockey dude.
You can channel that hockey dude right on out of here.
Yeah, right. You know, well, my guy there, you know, wiped into the boards the first time around, still came back and did pretty well. Now, it was fun to watch. But the real big news of the night was Brianna Decker, who was demoing the passing challenge and unofficially beat everybody's pants.
I don't know if that's true. I've heard conflicting reports that somebody on social media sort of timed it out and said that because they didn't have an actual clock going. And then the NHL looked at it later and it was actually had a non-winning time. So I'm not entirely sure how that has all panned out.
I don't know. It looked pretty quick. The bits that I've seen.
Yeah, well, but I mean, I wouldn't say it looked pretty quick because guess what? They didn't show it.
The bits that I saw, I don't know. I'm not going to get into the semantics of whether she did or not legally or I don't know. Because it took on a life of its own, basically.
I mean, and it's annoying that they didn't time her. Why not? I mean, yes, she wasn't officially competing, but it still would have been cool to see how fast she did it.
It really would have been cool because it looked, the optics of it from the people that were there and were, you know, unofficially timing it and were watching it and unofficially timing it, you know, it came in faster than the winning time. Now, there's a lot of players that really, really struggled on that particular challenge, but the whole movement of Paige Decker was just sort of a delight to see, because there's a little bit of aspect of sort of trained monkey that comes around, you know, with having the women there to demo things like, oh, look, women are so good at hockey, aren't they? And that's a little icky at times. Mm-hmm. So when you have one woman player who's actually competing and then you have another one who's excelling at something and you're looking at the optics as now, don't get me wrong, the NHL was in a no-win situation here. I mean, they are in a no-win situation because if they do contest her time, it'll look like they're, you know, they're protecting their players. It's looking a little bit like sour grapes. If they didn't do anything at all and there was this huge upswell of Paige Decker because everybody's like, she should have won the prize money because she had the fastest time. It's the optics of not doing anything are like, well, you know, you just brought her out here because it looked cute and fun, just like, you know, you bring the mascots out. And then there was a little bit of piling on of Leon Draisaitl because everybody was saying, well, he should have turned the money over to her because she was the rightful winner. And that's really not fair to him either because you're putting the onus on him. It was just really kind of a little bit of a public relations nightmare. And
people were piling on and stuff before. Like, I mean, Leon Draisaitl had no idea. And so he's getting a bunch of crap on social media.
Right.
At a time where he's still like on the bench.
Right. And people said, did you realize that her time was fast? He's like, no, really? Wow, that's great. You know, he wasn't disputing it.
He
at
was
all.
Impressed.
But, you know, he certainly wasn't saying, here, take my money either. And the optics of this, and the reason I was tweeting about it over the weekend as well, I mean, the optics of this are more than just she was faster. It comes down to sort of a financial disparity as well, because A, the players who are there, are even the entry-level players, the rookies, I mean, they're making a lot of money. And you get a bonus for being in the All-Star game. And then you get a bonus for like winning a competition. And if you win the All-Star game, the actual game, like you split $1 million. Which,
yep.
So, you know, yeah, you're giving up, you know, a longer vacation that everybody else gets a break, but, you know, you're making some bank just by the fact that you were selected. Now, I don't know what compensation was given to the women players at all, or if it was just a chance of exposure. That's something that we'll probably, we probably won't know, because it's the sort of thing that they keep close to the vest anyway. But women players don't make a lot of money.
No, no. They, I think the CWHL pays between $2,000 and $10,000 a season.
Yeah, like a season. So there's nobody, there's no woman playing pro hockey who doesn't have some sort of outside gig, whether it's coaching or being an accountant during the week. I mean, there's lots of, I was reading an article in The Athletic about, you know, it's sort of the weekend road warriors of the Canadian women's hockey team, because, you know, they would come home on Sundays after traveling on the bus all weekend playing games and like have to get up and go to work the next day, because you can't make a, you can't make a living as a pro female hockey player. So the optics of the fact that, you know, you maybe have could have like unofficially won this competition, and it would have been, it's not just nice to sort of honor that accomplishment. Like $25,000 would have
been
more
than twice as much as the highest paid.
Exactly. Well, then the NHL turned, well, first a couple things happened. It did trend on Twitter. It was a trending topic in Canada, which I love, because we have our Beginner's Puck account set to Canada Trends, because there's more hockey talk in Canada, so it makes more sense. Mm-hmm. So I was watching that as I was on the Beginner's Puck Twitter account, and I was watching it sort of rise up, the trends. And actually, was it CCM came through and said that we're going to pay Decker? And he's, and CCM is one of their one of their sponsors. And they said, we're going to give her the $25,000. And she was like, she was very grateful for it, because like I said, $25,000 is a ton of cash when you're playing at that level. And then the NHL later came back and said they were going to give all of the ladies $25,000 to donate to the to the hockey organization or charity of their choice, which I was like, well, none of the guys were given that stipulation of, we're going to give you $1 million if you win this game that you can donate. Like, no, you get to chunk that up and take it home.
Yeah, that's so, that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of thing that you give to millionaires or really successful. Like, you know, when you're watching Top Chef Masters or something, and it's all it's all really accomplished chefs who are just really participating for kind of the fun of it and
the fun, the funsies. Yeah,
yeah. The the fun, and also, you know, to for the exposure of their brand. Whereas when you have a person who might have a restaurant, but maybe a struggling restaurant on regular old Top Chef, those people get to keep the money. They're not giving it to charity.
It does. Now, I did hear that the NHL did give them some sort of compensation. I don't know what that is. We'll probably never know what that is.
It was not disclosed as far as I knew.
Yeah. But so they were kind of, it was just this really awkward thing. In fact, I was listening to Stelic and Summer this morning on NHL radio on the way to work, and they have, Mondays they always have Jeff Merrick on, and they were talking about the All-Star game, and they're like, so what did you think about this? He's like, it was the weekend of the women. Like, you can talk about all this other stuff, but let's face it, these women came in, and it was amazing, and the NHL really shone a light on the skills of women players. And, like, Stelic and Summer were like, okay, next topic. You know what I mean? It was, they, like, completely jumped over that. They may have talked about it earlier in the hour, I don't know, but it was like, they just completely moved on from that. So, there were some people who were, like, really kind of butthurt that these women got any kind of exposure at all. And I guess my point wasn't something that I talked about on Twitter this weekend, is the lack of resources that women players have compared to the men. There is such a clear and distinct pipeline for talented boys to work through local hockey, to junior hockey, to, you know, to playing, you know, in a junior league or whatever, or heading into college, where women players, girl players don't have that same sort of very structure. So these women are competing at this level with a minuscule amount of the resources that are offered to NHL players. I mean, they don't have the fantastic locker rooms, and they don't have the staff, and they don't have the support groups and that
the trainers and
the masseuse. They don't have a cold tank that they can go in after. You know what I mean? They don't have any of that. And yet they're coming out and competing at that level. And I'm thinking, I've never been an advocate for women playing in the NHL until somebody says they can't. And then I'm like, all right, let's talk about this, because you're comparing two completely different things. Yes, women are never going to have the same physical build that men have. And they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be Dustin Bufflin out there, you know, ramming people into the boards. They're not going to be Tom Wilson. But they're certainly going to be a Johnny Gaudreau. And there can certainly be a Kyler Yamamoto, where the game is moving towards smaller and skilled. I'm sorry, it doesn't matter if you're a 165-pound woman or a 165-pound dude. If you're going to get checked, it's going to hurt. Do you know what I mean? But nobody looks at a little player and says, oof, maybe you shouldn't, son. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And I mean, and if you're skating as fast as Kendall Coyne was, whose time was 14.346, like that is unbelievably fast. And yes, the game is moving fast. And I actually did just look it up. And Brianna Decker's time was 1:12, so only 3 seconds slower than Draisaitl. She still beat six of the other players.
All right. So where did you get that time? Like, who posted that?
Elliot Friedman posted that the NHL checked it. So that came from the NHL.
Okay.
According to Elliot Friedman, and I mean, I do believe Elliot Friedman.
Okay.
Looking at the video, I would assume.
Yeah. Because I would say he was probably hoping that she did win, knowing Elliot Friedman. He was probably doing it to prove a point. All right. So, yeah, I just my dander was up all weekend. I'm like, you know, dudes are saying, coming out of the woodwork, you know, saying, women just can't do it. They're never meant to play this game. And I thought, you know, until this moment, I wouldn't have been an advocate for having women play on a men's league. But, you know, screw that. I got really mad about it. So, I mean, obviously, I would hope that we would throw more resources towards women hockey, because it's a fascinating sport. You want to talk about fast and skilled. Women are playing fast and skilled right now because that is their strength. And, you know, it doesn't get as much love. So I guess the moral of this story is, you know, support women's hockey. Go see a game, fill the stands. Yep. It's
you know, there's so many people who say, oh, you know, I'm not looking at gender or race. I just want the best person for the job. Well, guess what? If somebody's that skilled or that fast or whatever, then yeah, maybe they should get the job.
Right. And Kendall Coyne, for example, is the first woman player who was playing in the Chicago Pro Hockey League, which is the summer league. I believe it's a summer league, sort of like the beauty league that a lot of pro players play in the summer. To, you know, keep their skills up, and she is the first woman who's been invited to play. It's an invitation only, and she played with the boys. So there's somebody saying these girls have skills, and they do. And I keep thinking, there was a really, really great article, and maybe I'll link it in the show notes, a couple years ago, that came out about Austin Matthews and another player, McKenna, I can't remember her last name right now, both from Arizona, and like what their trajectories were playing hockey. And it was basically, you know, Austin Matthews had all these opportunities afforded to him. Again, there was a very clear pipeline and where he could go. And with McKenna, it was more her parents had to fly her from Texas to Pittsburgh to play in a league because there wasn't elite hockey leagues for girls in that area. And then they ended up spending, you know, so much money to put her in an elite boarding school where she would have more opportunities to hone her skills with good coaches and everything because there was nothing locally. And then, you know, she's playing in college currently. So, you know, just the disparity of the opportunity that's available to really, really skilled women. I wonder, like, if you had the same opportunities that that the boys have to play, like, what would we be turning out wise, talent wise?
Right. Yep.
Fascinating to think. Yeah. So that was very interesting. It was kind of the hullabaloo. The game itself, the skills competition is always fun. Austin Matthews, you know, did a little sleight of hand and pulled off his jersey and put a Marlowe jersey on, which made the San Jose fans go crazy. It was cute. Oh, come on. I know you're a Leafs hater, but stop. It was adorable. It's playing to the crowd.
I guess. I mean, I didn't really understand it because I don't know the...
Oh my God! Patrick Marleau played for San Jose for like 20 years.
Yeah. See, I didn't realize that at first. Stephen had to point that out to me. I was like, oh, okay, now I get it. Because at first I was like, why is everybody cheering that? I don't understand.
Yeah. No. It was cute because he literally has been there for 100 years and then went over to the Leafs. So it was cute. Game was super anticlimactic. That was so dull. It was the dullest hockey game I've ever seen in my life. Well, no.
I enjoyed it very much. Actually, I think that was
because
the most
you
fun
had the good
watching.
Feed.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. We definitely did have fun. We had Jack Eichel was mic'd up while he was on the bench and on the ice for a while. And at one point, while he's on the ice, he makes a pass and says, and I will bleep myself. But he goes, that was a spit pass. He didn't say spit. like about himself. He wasn't talking about anybody else. It was just it was hilarious. And he's just he sounds so laid back and laconic while he was on the ice. And then they did a little in between periods. Scott Oak, who is my favorite interviewer, I just love him so much, did a quiz with Jack Eichel, gave him song lyrics from classic rock songs, and Jack Eichel aced it. He got every single song right. And I mean, it's not like Scott Oak was singing tidbits. It was just like a line of lyrics from a random classic rock song. And they weren't even all ones that I would consider easy. Like, there were some that I didn't know. So, I'm old.
See, like, we didn't have anything fun. Like, last year, you guys had, like, P.K. Subban, like, doing mic'd up stuff, too. Like, we had none of that. We had, you know, Doc Emmerich and Eddie Olczyk, like, just very seriously commentating the game. I'm like, this is not a serious game. Like,
no.
There were times it's very obvious that players are like, I'm not hurting myself out here because this is not worth it. You know, the effort maybe was a little lesser, but it wasn't that much
fun. I will point out that that one of our blind listeners did say that they had to switch over to the radio broadcast feed because the TV commentators were not actually really doing play-by-play. And sometimes it bothers me when TV commentators don't do very good play-by-play because they start talking about random other stuff, and I find that annoying. I feel like the All-Star Game is the time for that, but it is annoying from an accessibility perspective that, that you can't actually hear what's going on. And I think part of the reason in the All-Star Game they don't do specific play-by-play is that there's only, you know, it's 3-on-3, and as you said, they're obviously trying not to hurt themselves, so there's not always a lot to say in terms of calling the plays because there's not always a lot of play going on. So it's more of just, at least in Canada, more of an event sort of a thing. So they're taking that time to let the announcers also kind of relax and have some fun in the same way the players are.
Yeah, I know. Like when Miro Heiskanen like wiped out during the speech, like I just like, oh God, no. It's a little baby rookie. It's his first All-Star game. Like, I felt bad for him because it was obviously, you know, an embarrassing thing to happen. But also, like, don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt here.
Be careful. So,
yeah. All right. The other exciting thing that happened All-Star weekend was we had an announcement about the new high-tech changes that are coming to your hockey viewing experience. Now, where do you sit on this one?
I'm fine putting little, you know, what RFID tags or whatever they are on the players to track where they're going. That's fine. I don't care. The puck, putting a chip in the puck, as long as they can get the puck to behave the way a puck is supposed to, I'm fine with that too. But they got to be real sure because sometimes pucks take funny bounces and stuff. So just got to be careful.
Yeah, it's going to be. I don't mind anything that makes hockey more accessible to people. So as a brand new hockey fan, like I probably would have really enjoyed that because it took a while to train my eyes to watch hockey. And I still don't feel like I watch the game as well as I could. Like I'm just now starting to see plays develop. Like I don't look at the game and completely understand all the time what's happening. And it's just not chaos. And sometimes it is chaos, but most of the time it's not chaos. There's actually forethought and plans and like, how do I respond to this? How do I do this? So I think a little bit more knowledge of what I'm seeing on the ice would have been very helpful. So I'm kind of curious about it. I just hope it doesn't get like super cluttered and the viewing experience isn't becoming so overwhelming. You know, like sometimes you play a video game and there's so much information and data on the screen. It's like, to me, I find that very overwhelming.
Yeah, we didn't actually have access to that anyway. So I didn't have the opportunity to even watch their high-tech feed here in Canada.
Yeah, I just saw little bits of it. So I think what it's really going to be interesting. And actually, I'm kind of curious as to how this is going, the fallout of this is going to affect contract negotiations, how it's going to affect analytics and stats, because all of a sudden it's going to be real data. It's not going to be somebody in the booth sort of tracking things. It's going to be scientific data coming through, true facts, you know, skating speed, shot speeds, you know.
How much how much of that are they actually going to release to the public? How much of that is going to be on some sort of high-tech feed? And how much of it is going to be kept private that is, you know, just for the teams and or the coaches and or the gambling establishments? I mean, I don't think that they have really come to a decision yet in terms of how that information is going to be disseminated and to whom. So that may also make a difference as to how I feel about it.
Right. And it's going to be interesting, too, when you think about the idea, you know, tracking players' speed now when it comes to assessing penalties or assessing fines or assessing suspensions, because, you know, you will be able to tell, did a skater speed up to make a hit? What, you know what I mean? Mm. Or what was the speed and how hard was that hit? Are we going to start looking at that?
Is there a speed limit? A speed limit for hockey?
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm thinking, you know, because there's always like the eye test. You know, it looks like he was trying to avoid the mm-hmm. the skater. But if you have real data saying, well, actually, he kind of sped up a little bit and kind of leaned into it, you know, because you're going to be able to tell if you've got your players chipped and you got your pucks chipped. If everything's chipped, like you've got at this point, it's not the eye test. It's not interpretation. You have facts that will then be added into that equation. So I think it's going to be really, really interesting. To see not just the fact that we have this data, but how this data is going to be applied and what the NHLPA is going to have to say about this, because, you know, they may decide that this is not necessarily a good thing when it comes to player contract negotiations, having this stuff. So, I don't know.
Although for some players, maybe it will be a great thing.
It
Who knows?
Could be. You don't know.
I mean, honestly, it's like anything with a big union. You know, some of it, it's going to be great for some people and not for other people. So who do you represent?
That's right. Oh, the old analytics versus the gut feeling and the eye test. It just keeps getting further and further apart. All right. So we had a big trade today. Did you see this?
Are you talking about the Maple Leafs?
Yes. This, I think, is the biggest trade to date. So, I mean, we had a little trade, which was Jamie Oleksiak went from the Penguins back to the Dallas Stars for the same fourth round pick that the Dallas Stars got last year when they traded Jamie Oleksiak to the Penguins. So it basically washed itself out completely.
They hit Control Z.
Exactly. They just, zoop, never happened. Don't know what you're talking about. Never saw Pittsburgh. But we got Jake Muzzin from the LA Kings, has been traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs for a first-round pick next year, 2019 first-round pick this year, I guess, 2019. Carl Grunstrom and Sean Durzi. Now, Carl is playing for the AHL Marlies right now, but there's talk that he is just about NHL ready. Sean Durzi's still in juniors, but he's, you know, the prospects, they have the rights to him. And I think this is a good trade for both teams. And I know you don't care because it's the Maple Leafs, but I'm going to tell you why. My opinion.
I don't care because it's Maple Leafs and it's the Kings.
It's the Kings. All right. But this is a good trade. I'm putting on my hockey dude voice again, because let me tell you why.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
This is like because, you know, Maple Leafs, they're really hurting on the D. They're hurting on the defense. And we just got to get somebody in there that can, you know, bolster that. Morgan Riley just can't do everything, people. OK, so you need somebody else in there. You need a veteran player. Somebody's going to go to the line. I don't know. I'm losing my dude voice here. But somebody who has been there, a voice in the room, who's been through playoffs, who's won a Stanley Cup, and you get that with Muzzin. Meanwhile, the LA Kings this year decided to go older and slower for some inexplicable reason. So
yeah,
this trade benefits them because it puts some players in their pipeline, plus they get a first-round draft pick next year because they need to get younger, they need to get faster. So it's a win-win, I think. I mean, Toronto did give up a lot to get this guy, but they really needed this guy, and I think it shows their commitment to making a run for the playoffs, and they feel that they have a shot here at least to get past the first round. So I know there's a lot of people that think Toronto gave too much away. There's some people saying, why did we give away Muzzin? Because he's you know, a good player, but
he's one of the best players on our team.
Yeah, but let's face it, LA's not doing anything this year. They're going nowhere, and they're
Might
not going to
well
go anywhere
because
they're old and slow. They need some.
Well, they're going to go somewhere. It's going to take them a long time to get there.
That's right. They're going to go very slowly, you know, and need some Metamucil or something along the way. I don't know. They're just old and slow. Mm-hmm. So I think it was beneficial in both parts. So I liked it. I like this trait. Like, anybody cares what I think. That's dude talk. Okay. Speaking of young and fast, I've been reading a lot because, you know, Edmonton's your team, right? And I know you guys are going through some hard times, and people are talking about what will it take to fix the Oilers now that we're living in the post-Chiarelli era. And a lot of things that I keep bumping up to is that it's not the bad trades or what's perceived as the bad trades that have really hurt Edmonton. It's the lack of talent coming up. And it's the farm system, the drafting hasn't, and the scouting hasn't been as good as it could be. And they're like, if you look at the list of players that went to World Juniors, you know, what does Edmonton have in the pipeline that's getting a lot of attention in the world of juniors and everything? And like, Edmonton hasn't had that. And you have Evan Bouchard, who's really great and really talented. But nobody else is, they're not talking about a lot of other Oilers. So I was like, well, what is it? Like, why is this so important? I've been thinking about this because it's something that the Flyers have not been able to get very far in the season, and they haven't had a very successful season, but everybody talks about the Flyers have a lot of great kids coming up. So we're going to be good someday. We just don't know when that day is going to be, but all of our kids are doing great things elsewhere. You know, they're out there, they're making a name for themselves. So I thought for this week's What the Puck, we could talk about scouting.
Excellent idea. It's time for What the Puck, those things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn sometime.
Yeah.
So Deb, what the puck is up with scouting?
All right. So scouting is like one of those concepts that it's exactly what it sounds like. You have people that go out and scout for talent. And there's all sorts of really interesting articles out there because I've been reading up on this, like the life of an NHL scout. And basically every team has scouts on their staff. And a lot of times they're ex-players. Sorry, my dog is going crazy. She likes scouting too.
Very exciting about scouts, yeah.
She's very excited about scouts. So your team will have scouts on the staff. And like I said, a lot of times they are ex-players. You know, somebody said, it's usually not the players who were really good. It's the players who were okay. So like Wayne Gretzky was never a scout, but Keith Gretzky was. So for a lot of players, you know, there's only so many broadcast jobs opening up. So like you want to stay in hockey, like what do you do? And often scouting is sort of the next step. It's sort of an entry level into maybe moving on to coaching or doing something else. So a lot of players are looking to stay in hockey, and scouting is a way to do that. And what a scout does is basically watches a butt ton of hockey and tries to pick players that they can keep an eye on. So when they come up for the draft, that they can advise their team to say, this is a player that we should be keeping an eye on. And as the draft gets closer this year, you'll notice lots of top 10 lists. So right now, Jack Hughes has been on the top of the 2019 draft list for just about forever because he is one of those generational talents. And that's because there's scouts out there who've been watching this kid probably since he was 10 years old, and their buzz is going around, and hockey is a very insular community. So coaches know scouts knows coaches, people, you know, you have former players whose kids are playing. So it's like everybody's chatting and talking to each other. And this is just a formalized way of weaponizing that chatter into making good draft picks.
I think like there's a lot of people that do scouting, but if to really be good at it, it's got to be like a magic prognostication. Like there are some people, I assume, who just really have an eye for who is going to be great. And I find that amazing.
Yeah. I don't think they work for the Oilers, though.
I think you are not wrong about that.
Yeah. So, and one reason why scouting is incredibly important is because we live in what's called the salary cap era. And the salary cap era basically says your pot of money is limited on how much you can spend. So if you have some star players, such as an Austin Matthews or a Connor McDavid or a Leon Draisaitl or a Jonathan Toews, you were spending a lot of money to keep them. And that means you only have so much money to spend on other players. And you have to have more than two players on your roster to win a game. I know that's shocking. But
what?
Right? Isn't that ridiculous? So next year, 2019-2020 season, the salary cap is going to be $83 million. Now, it was like 72, then it went up to like 75. So it is jumped mm-hmm. incrementally. But what was it when Connor McDavid signed at 10 point something or 13? What was his salary? 13?
Or 12.5.
12.5.
The rumors were it was going to be 13.5 and then it was actually 12.5. Right. But I don't remember what the salary cap was.
I think it was like 73 or 74. So you figured that's a huge chunk of your salary mm-hmm. cap, right? So the way that you get around that is you develop talent. And hopefully, you know, these may be superstars, they may not be superstars, but they're players that you're going to get on the cheap for a significant number, like 3 years on an entry-level contract. So scouting is incredibly important because a scout will go out, and again, they tend to divide the country into regions. And if you read any reports of what it's like to be a scout, it means spending a lot of time on the road, a lot of time driving, a lot of time in hotel rooms. It sounds really grueling. It sounds fascinating, but it sounds really grueling. And they'll watch as many hockey games as they can. They communicate with the coaches in the junior hockey and in college hockey. I was reading one article about a Pittsburgh scout, and he was talking, they have, you know, programs that they put their information in and they tabulate things constantly. So there's just this ongoing, just reams of data that's coming in and players that they're watching. And, you know, you're talking about kids, and they start watching kids at like 12, 13, 14 years old. And you think about how much a child changes between 14 and 18 when they're eligible for the draft. So it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like witchcraft.
It's also interesting to think about, say a decade or two down the road, when not only do we have the sort of real-time stats and chips and stuff on the players at the NHL level, but where we get to the point where all that stuff is just so cheap and easy to do that you start putting it possibly on kids. And then you get the sort of analytics versus the eye test thing on kids and how much more data is going to be coming in and how much more our team is going to possibly rely on that than the scouts with the eye test. And honestly, talking about analytics, I would be very interested if there are any analytics out there, like even right now, on scouting. Like, is anybody keeping track of, you know, all of the various scouts and the players that they have recommended and how well or not well the players, you know, recommended by each scout have actually ended up doing after their first couple of years in the NHL? Like, that's the kind of data that I am always really interested in and fascinated by. But there's also the wrinkle, and on that front, in that, you know, if you're a scout, like, you want to keep your job as a scout because that's your job. So you need to be careful about who you're going to recommend. And, you know, maybe somebody is a little bit more of a risky choice. You know, some kid is like, you think he's going to be great, but he's more of a risk, versus another kid who is a safe bet. Which do you put forward? You know, do you recommend them both? Do you recommend the safe bet because you want to keep your job as a scout? Do you go out on a limb and then possibly that kid tanks and you never get trusted again? So, like, there's definitely some strategy even within the job of scouting, which I think is also kind of a fascinating thing too.
It really is. And, like, I haven't been able to find any, like, hard information on, like, what are, like, show me your sheets. You know, because everybody's mm-hmm. like scribbling things down on sheets. Like, what is it that you're looking at? And I think every team goes into, every scout kind of goes into something with an eye, because it's usually, and I remember reading something that said, you know, it's usually not the best players who are scouts, but they're players who have really good hockey sense, make really good scouts, or anybody who has a good hockey sense rather than have been mm-hmm. a good player, because you need to be able to watch the game, see what kids are doing, see how they're playing, see how they're reacting to things. What is their mm-hmm. character like? I mean, there's all sorts of things that go into that. And I would imagine that they probably don't want that information out there, because if you've got a really good scout, like, you might have another team make a run for it, you know, and say, look. And scouts make mistakes all the time. I mean, how often do we see like top 10 draft picks that just wash out and never turn into anything? Or you have somebody like a Jamie Benn, who was, I think, drafted in the 7th round, who turns out to be an elite player. And that's good scouting. If you can convince, you know, you can convince a team to pick somebody who probably that as far down as he was drafted, it was a good chance he wasn't going to get drafted, and say, look, mm-hmm. take a chance on this kid. There's something there. I mean, that's a real skill. So it's a fascinating subject. And I'm going to be poking around looking for some more reading on this, because I was just reading, you know, various articles. New York Times had a few, and ESPN had a really interesting one. If there's any books written by scouts, there has to be something out there, like what that life is like and what they're looking for and what the successes and are, because they honestly, this is the lifeblood of your team. You need to fill those roster spots. And if you don't have a strong farm system, if you don't have kids coming up the pipeline, then you're relying on trading to get what you want. And when you're relying on trading to get what you want, you're automatically, I think, at a disadvantage, because it means you have to give mm-hmm. something away to get something rather than growing something organically for little cash, very little cash. So it's really interesting when you think about what it takes to build a hockey team and to build a successful team. I mean, we're still not there yet, but we've got kids tearing up all over the world. Just mm-hmm. at some point, they're going to have to mature and they're going to have to make it up here. But it was the one thing that Ron Hextall did. I think he's being very criticized right now because he took it too slow. He was very patient, a little bit too patient for Philadelphia, but we got a lot of assets out there.
Mm-hmm. The future is bright.
The future is bright, but it's far away. Very, very far away. So I don't know what's going on with that.
Well, you'll get there eventually. You will.
Absolutely.
Yep. Well, why don't you bring us on home with a hockey tidbit to close things out?
Oh, all right. I'm going with the cute.
I'm all
hockey
for cute.
Puppies. Hockey puppies, Erica.
Yes.
They are mm-hmm. all over Instagram. They are all over Tumblr. They're all over Twitter. There has been a little movement in the world of pro hockey to adopt puppies, a specific mm-hmm. puppy. And they're always service dogs. They're dogs that are being trained to be companions. And they're nice PR. They're adorable and they're cute. And you see pictures of them with little hockey jerseys on all the time, or you see videos of them on the ice chasing pucks, and you just want to die because they're so cute. I think every team should have a hockey puppy.
I like that.
I do too. I mean, the New York Islanders, New York Rangers have one. Why? It's too cute and it kills me every time. And it makes me like teams because they have a puppy. And sometimes I don't want to. Like if the Anaheim Ducks get a puppy, I just don't know what I'm going to do. Crisis of conscience right now. I'm telling you.
Yeah, there's actually a rescue organization in Edmonton called Zoe's. And I know that at least a couple of Edmonton Oilers have adopted rescue dogs through Zoe's, which I think is just a fantastic mm-hmm. thing.
It is. They're not official Edmonton yep. Oiler dogs.
No, like, no. They're not like, you know, they don't represent the team.
Right. And I don't exactly. know, like, who this dog goes home
maybe
with
someday.
At night. Yeah. I don't know who the dogs go home with. Like, you just see them, like, in the locker room. You see them on the ice, and they're trotted out for promotional purposes. I mean, let's be real. They're just there to make the mm-hmm. team look good, and they're fun. And
yep.
I am all for that. And they're doing good works because they are going to go on to be service dogs.
Yeah, I know in baseball, the Milwaukee Brewers have Hank the puppy, who is adorable, and I love him very much, and it would make me very happy if the Oilers got a puppy like Hank. Although Hank joined the Oilers because he like just marched onto their practice field in Arizona and was just like, woof, hello, and somebody had to take him home.
Join the Brewers, not the Oilers.
Yeah, the Brewers, okay. Which is why I'm thinking that same way of adopting a puppy is not necessarily going to work for the Oilers, because I can't imagine a stray dog just wandering onto the ice at their practice space. Yeah.
I think you would be legally obligated to adopt it if a dog could get in and get on your ice. I think at that point, like, you have no choice. The rules are clear. Mm-hmm. The rules are clear. Yeah. So that's my hockey tidbit. I think every team should have a hockey puppy. And it just makes me smile every time I see one because it's a puppy. And who doesn't love a puppy? So
here, here.
All right.
That was a great, great hockey tidbit to close this out. I love it. I love it. So yeah, everybody, thanks for listening. You have been listening to Beginner's Puck. Remember, hockey is for everyone, especially you. Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at beginnerspuck or email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our great show notes at theincomparable.com/puck.